You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Go Wild. Now, the Go Wild app has added some really cool and exciting functionality to their app. And the first one I want to talk about is the Near Me function. And basically what this does, it allows you to engage and connect with people in your area. You guys can talk about gear. You guys can talk about hunting areas. You guys can talk about what's going on in the woods. And it just allows the users to be more of a community and connect easier. The second part is the Gearbox. And what the Gearbox is, it is an opportunity for the users to not only see reviews on products and see what the Go Wild community is using in the field, what products they're using, but it also allows you guys to purchase up to 150,000 products. There's a shopping function on it. So check out the Go Wild app. If you haven't downloaded it to your phone yet, you need to, and you can do that at any app store that is currently available. Go Wild. It's an awesome app. Check them out.
Welcome to the Missouri Woods and Water Podcast.
Podcast.
Oh, man. I'm your host, Nate Thomas. With me today,
Andy Humfeld.
What's up, dude?
What's going on?
We got a good one today. We talked to Missouri Department of Conservation fishery guy, yep. Andrew Branson. Andrew comes on, and we talk about pond management.
Pond management, healthy ponds, healthy fish.
Yep. And we have some good time. We talk about what kind of fish you should have stocked, what kind of vegetation's good, bad, all kinds of interesting stuff. So
a lot of good information for sure. I mean, just this was, I felt like, was more of a informative, I guess, podcast, more than a storytelling type podcast, which I think hopefully our listeners will find useful.
Yeah, I've never had anybody learn anything from me ever, so this could
be a first.
This could be a first. Yeah. So, hope y'all enjoy the show. This is the Missouri Woods and Water Podcast. Podcast. All right, welcome to the show. Today we are joined by Andrew Branson with the Missouri Department of Conservation. Andrew, what's going on, man?
Oh, not a whole lot. Ready to talk about the great outdoors here in Missouri.
Yeah, we're excited to have you. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, my pleasure. Yeah, always a fun topic.
Yeah. So before we get into our topic today, which for the listeners, we're going to talk about pond management and what goes into having a healthy farm pond in Missouri. Why don't you introduce yourself, tell everybody what you do for MDC, and then why don't you tell us something that you love about the Missouri outdoors? What's your favorite thing?
Oh, okay. My name is Andrew Branson, and I've been with the Department of Conservation for, oh gosh, I guess about 15 years now. I was born and raised in Missouri, Southwest Missouri, and actually, kind of an interesting fact, I'm a part of the Branson, Missouri. So I've got a little history there, but definitely have a love for Missouri. One of the things I've always loved about Missouri is really just the kind of the variety of things we have in the state, a variety of outdoor type things. You know, Missouri itself, the state is, you know, it's kind of, well, it's located in the center of the country, and it seems to be right on the dividing line of all sorts of, you know, different zones and different soil types. So as we know, northern Missouri is different than southern Missouri, and southeast from, you know, from southwest. And I grew up loving to fish and float, you know, those clear streams. And then also, you know, I really loved, you know, all the rocks and the caves in Missouri. So yeah. Those are things I really liked. And, you know, I have lived out of state in some other states and ultimately came back to Missouri. But yeah, when you move out of Missouri, you realize, you know, as great as some other states are, you realize just how special Missouri is.
Yeah, I think I said it in one of our first shows that Missouri is like five different states in one. You've got,
oh yeah,
you know, a bunch of stuff coming together in our state, which I think makes it cool. So what did you say about Branson? I kind of missed you there. You're part of...
Yeah, I'm from that area, born and raised in that area, and yeah, Branson, Missouri is named after my my great-great-great uncle.
Oh, that's cool.
Great-great-uncle, wow. Reuben Branson. Yeah. So yeah, a little history there, and so my, I guess, roots run deep down in that area.
Yeah, that's cool.
Sounds like it, yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, like I said, we're excited to have this topic today. Whenever we get the opportunity to talk about fishing and that sort of stuff, we always go back to what we fish most, which is, you know, farm ponds with our kids.
Yep.
You know, we have small children and each of us have, you know, Andy grew up on a farm and farms, yep. And I've got a pond right out back, and, you know, that's typically the fishing we get to do anymore is that sort of fishing with kids. And so I thought a really cool topic would be what goes into having a successful pond. I mean, there's tens of thousands of them,
yeah,
in our state.
You
know, I read an article before we talked to kind of do some research about what we were going to talk about. And I read an article about where the pond came from in general. And if I can remember what he said correctly, it was a Southern thing, you know, back in the day, long ago, about making ponds. But have you ever heard about where ponds came from, you know, back in the day?
Well, not specifically, but, you know, I do know that I think originally my guess would be is that it was just, you know, a water source for livestock, a water source for animals. I know early on in the Missouri Department of Conservation's history, that was a big program that we had where we actually, mm-hmm. you know, I think we're talking in the 50s and, I mean, many decades ago, where we actually built farm ponds for people. And they were... You know, it was thought of that these farm ponds, you know, again, they're going to be holding water, and it's actually going to be a water source for wild animals, you know, Missouri wildlife, yeah. Deer that pass through the area and different things, you know. There's going to be a ready source of water in the areas that may be, you know, not near a river or a lake or something like that. But so, yeah, it was kind of a win-win, you know. Farm ponds were built around Missouri to help, you know, help water wildlife. But then, of course, also the farmers, the landowners, you know, could water livestock with it and add fish and then, you know, create a fun little activity there. But you're right. Farm ponds, I think anybody that likes to fish probably has fond memories of fishing in farm ponds. Some of the best fishing is in farm ponds. I mean, you've got lots of hungry fish right there, easy to get to. You know, stream fishing and river fishing, that's a different type of fishing. That's really fun. But, you know, farm ponds are good for everybody.
Yeah.
Well, I think for a lot of people, you know, busy people like everyone here on the conversation, you have a few hours on a weekend. What are you more apt to do? Run out to a farm pond that you know you can get to, catch a few fish? Or, I mean, for me, I mean, it takes a full day of planning and getting to, you know, a larger body of water or down to a stream or something, and it turns into a whole day ordeal to where, I mean, the busier lives that I'm sure all of our listeners have too, you're more apt to grab a pole and a tackle box and
run outside,
spend a few hours down a pond as opposed to running to the Lake of the Ozarks.
That's right. That's right. Yep. Farm ponds are definitely fun. And I get, you know, that's, again, one of the things I do here at the Department of Conservation. I work here at the headquarters in Jeff City and I answer web questions and phone calls and people walking in. All about farm ponds. You know, people ask, you know, were my ponds doing this? Didn't used to, but now it's got these issues, and how do I take care of that? And or another common one is people will buy some property that has a pond on it, and they've never had a pond before, and they don't know if it's in good shape or bad shape, or basically what they're wondering, you know, what I need to know to be a good pond owner. And
yep.
And
yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot to it.
And let's stay right on topic, actually, because I was going to kind of have you talk about both building a new pond and when you buy a new property and it has a pond on it. What would you say for someone who is in that situation like I was 10 years ago when we bought this place? when you buy a new property that has a pond on it, what's some good things to do to kind of assess if you do or don't have a healthy pond?
Yeah, again, good question. First of all, I guess, personally, I've never been a pond owner, but what I would do is, you just kind of assess the pond. You would look and see, the amount of aquatic plant in the pond, does it seem to have, is there lots of water compared to aquatic plants? Do you see about, 25% of the pond is kind of covered with aquatic plants or edges, or is it more than that? Does it look, in your opinion, like it's starting to get choked out with plants? That's a good thing to know. Also ponds, they kind of change throughout the season. So depending on the time of year, you may not have a whole lot of aquatic plant growth, but then as the summer water warms up and the sun's been hitting the pond, plants are starting to take off. How does your pond look during that time? When it didn't look choked out, is it choked out now? And then the other thing is, fish the pond, fish it and see if you catch anything. And then you can kind of assess the type of fish you catch and maybe what their sizes are. Do they look healthy? Are they thin? Are they all the same size? Do you not really have much variety in size? That's another thing. And I guess one last thing I might do is if a pond owner can get a hold of a boat or a canoe or something, I would try to figure out how deep the pond is roughly. Mm-hmm. Just kind of boat out there and lower a string down on it with a rock on it or something, and mm-hmm. wait till you hit bottom. Again, knowing the pond depth, that will help you a lot as far as knowing if your pond is a potential candidate for a low oxygen fish kill in the summer. Shallower ponds have a harder time with that. So those are a few things. Just looking at the type of aquatic plants that are in there, how many, how deep the pond is, just things like that.
Yeah. That's when we first bought our place out here, that the pond is like an acre, 1.2 acres maybe or so of surface water. When we first moved out here, I talked to you all. I don't remember who. It's a long time ago. And that was some of the information I got was fish the pond. Start keeping track of what you're catching. How big? What are they? My big issue was I had, and I think it's called pondweed. Could be wrong, but it was a single leaf that sat on top of, right on top of the water. It looked like just a leaf that fell out of a tree.
Gotcha.
But then there were thousands of them. And so it looked like one solid, deal. And, with the help of MDC, I was able to get rid of pretty much all of it. And then introduce grass carp and things like that to help with that sort of stuff. But,
right.
Yeah. And you can see the difference when you start kind of working on it instead of, just kind of letting it sit, which is fine too. But it had been kind of left alone for 10 or 15 years, something like that, 10, right. 15, 20 years. And it kind of developed, some bad habits, you'd say. Yeah. So, that's cool with someone that has an existing pond. But what about if someone's looking to build one? Are there certain things that you recommend to them before? I know there's different sizes, but what would you recommend to someone that might be thinking about building a pond?
Well, probably the first thing would be contact your local conservation department office, talk with one of the private lands or fishery staff people, and more than likely they would come out and actually look at your site before you actually are building one to help you determine if it's going to be a good site for a pond. And what they look at, things like, the slope of the land, and they want to see if, all the land around the pond is called the watershed, and they want to look at the condition of that watershed and see if it's going to be funneling water to your pond at a good amount. Also, anything that's running across the landscape towards your pond is carrying things towards your pond as well. So,
right.
Again, it can be a good thing. More than likely, it's kind of a bad thing if you've got runoff from neighboring landowners that may have lots of livestock, and it's bringing all those, cattle waste and nutrients into your pond. Well, you can have that could be a situation where you may have constant algae problems in the pond with all the nutrients flowing in. But that's one thing, is to assess the site and just see what kind of runoff in the watershed you're going to get, what's going to be entering the pond. And again, you need to have a proper balance ratio of size of watershed to your pond, and that needs to be correct. If it's too low one way, your pond may have a hard time staying full, or if it's in the opposite direction, where too big a watershed sloping and dumping lots of water into your pond, well, gosh, I mean, your pond will have no problem with water, but it can actually overflow quite a bit during heavy flows, and people lose fish that way. You can have water flowing into a pond so quick and then flowing out that the fish flow right out with it. And
not enough volume retention. Things.
That's right. That's right. But yeah, if someone's building a pond, keep that in mind. Contact your local person to have them look at the site over with you. And then depending on that, they can make different recommendations. Sometimes you may have your main pond, but then it may be a good idea in your watershed to build a smaller pond, so to speak, upstream from it.
Yeah.
So that smaller pond will actually catch a lot of the runoff, catch a lot of the silt and debris that maybe trying to ultimately head to your bigger pond, it'll get caught up in that smaller pond. So that can be like a little retention pond for things.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, just talk to someone to look your site over.
Perfect. What would you say, with you taking all the online, inquiries and phone calls, what's, a few of the most common problems that you get called on? I mean, are there anything that just stick out over and over again that you're almost day-to-day common problems you get calls on?
Yeah, probably the big three that I get are, it really kind of depends on the time of year. During the heat of the summer, like right now, fish kills. I get calls on fish kills. That's a real common one. Someone will walk out to their pond one morning or later in the day, and they'll see a bunch of dead fish floating by or floating in their pond. And of course that can be quite alarming, and they'll call us and say, this has never happened before. So we talk about that. Another one is, algae problems, aquatic plant problems, their pond. Again, algae is the main thing, the kind of the slimy pond scum type issues, which is different from, I think, Nate, what you were saying earlier about the pond weed.
Right.
That's a different type of plant. So you treat them differently. But again, nuisance aquatic plants, that's another big one that we get.
Okay.
And then the final one is how to get their fish bigger. That's the real common one is their bass especially. They say, all my bass are small. I can't catch anything over 12 inches. I catch 10 to 12 inch bass all day long, and that's it. I can't catch anything bigger. And that's a real common problem, is what we call stunted bass or overstocked bass. So yeah, fish kills, and then, nuisance aquatic plant problems, and then, stunted fish. Those are the big three, I think.
What would you say to kind of break that down? I mean, just a 5 mile view of kind of the fish kill kind of interests me, because I would say it's back in 2011 or 12. We have about a 5 acre watershed, and man, I mean, I knew it was overstocked at the time. I mean, you could go down there and catch fish all day long, every cast almost. And I went down there one weekend, and I about passed out how sick in the stomach I was. I mean, there were thousands of fish laying on the bank dead. I thought every fish in that thing had died. And I'll be honest with you, I would say today that pond or lake, whatever you want to call it, is better for it. We started getting bigger bass, bigger crappie, bigger fish because of it. I think it was just overpopulated. And maybe you can help me with this answer. I mean, that kill off, I assumed it was from the lake or the pond turning over and the oxygen being sucked out of the water. Is that right? Is that something that happens? Or what is the main cause of fish kill like that in the summertime?
Yeah, it's a low oxygen fish kill typically, and you're right. It's in the summertime, the water warms up. Warmer water has a hard time holding as much oxygen as cooler water. So in the summer, your pond's not typically turning over. We all hear about pond turnover.
Okay.
And that's something that's generally just going to fall thing, and that's a different situation. You can get some fish kills from that. Again, when the pond turns over, maybe some lower oxygen water down deep is now brought up and mixed throughout the pond. But so again, you can have a fish kill from that. The main fish kills by far that people deal with are the summertime ones where okay. your pond is not turning over. But what's happening is, again, the water is warmed up in your pond. It's already struggling to hold oxygen because of the warm water. But what causes the fish kill is that warm water in combination with the aquatic plants in your pond. And that can be algae floating in the pond. It could be you know, leafy aquatic plants. Lots of times it's really just kind of the algae and the green water itself. The green water, most of our ponds aren't clear. They're going to have some color to them, and mm-hmm. typically it's greenish, and that's kind of microscopic algae floating in the water. But it acts like a plant. When it's sunny, plants produce oxygen like crazy. But when it's dark at night, plants do the opposite. They actually pull oxygen from the water.
Okay.
So a pond in the summertime has low, you know, it's got warm water, it's got low oxygen, and if it has lots of algae, maybe lots of green water during the day, that pond is producing oxygen like crazy. But then at night, it starts pulling oxygen from the water, like I said. And if the water is already struggling due to heat, yeah, you can have a fish kill. Fish kills, again, they're going to be occurring at night when it's dark, maybe just before sunup, when the pond's at its lowest oxygen. Again, once the sun pops up, boy, those plants are producing oxygen again. But like you said, you've already had your first round of fish kill. You'll see mm-hmm. some fish floating. Fish kills tend to last 2 to 3 days in a situation like that. They kind of have to run their course. That's the other thing people say is, you know, how long will this last? You know, I'm seeing them every morning. Well, a fish kill like that tends to last 2 to 3 days. And like you said, there is some good news to it. The good news is these fish kills typically don't wipe out a pond completely.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, stunted fish, overstocked fish is a problem people have. And these fish kills, they benefit the pond in the fact that they do thin down the fish population, and they usually bounce back stronger than ever, really.
Yep. That's what I feel like has happened in ours. And you mentioned before, kind of just, you know, through conversation, you ask about, you know, how much vegetation your pond has on it. You mentioned 25%. Is that, and am I just picking up, is that kind of where you would want to see vegetation at, to where to keep a healthy amount but not too much to suck that oxygen like you're talking? Is there a magic number of vegetation you want to try to be at?
Yeah, that's a rough number. That's pretty good. That's a pretty good amount, you know. And it's hard to estimate when you look at your pond. I mean, I guess if a pond was, if we looked, we could probably all tell if a pond was 50%. You know, if it seemed like, well, I see about 50% plants and I see 50% water, open water. So yeah, 25%, somewhere less than 50% would be good.
Okay.
And like I said, it really, there are other factors that, of aquatic plants. I mean, there's all different, some, you know, there's floating ones. There's ones that start from the bottom rooted and they mm-hmm. grow up to the surface.
Yeah.
There's ones that are at the edge. So it really varies. And also where they're located. If it's a cattails, for example, maybe cattails is all you have in your pond. And you look at it and you think, well, gosh, most of my pond is water, so it's less than 25% cattails. However, the cattails go all the way around, you know.
Right.
They ring my pond, basically, so mm-hmm. there's no place I can fish without having a couple feet of cattails in front of me. So, but, yeah, in general, you know, 20-25% of plants and the rest water, open water is good. That's kind of a good rule to go by.
Okay.
Yeah, that was the weed I had was kind of what you just explained, Andrew, was it circled my pond all the way around, maybe about 10 foot out the entire way, and it was yeah. it was a tube that grew from the pond's
from the bottom
up, and then had that little leaf sitting on top. And if I remember correctly, when I killed those, I treated one bank at a time.
To make sure.
To stop from having a zap of issues where I would have a fish kill as well.
Right.
Right. I don't remember who told me to do that, but it worked. They've been gone ever since then and been better fishing for it. But
yeah.
So speaking of fish.
That's good advice.
Yeah, it was. I know it was an MDC guy. I just don't remember who. That was so long ago. Yep. So, speaking of fish, I was doing some reading, and I actually was a little surprised by this, and you'll obviously know this when we get to talking about it. So if you're looking to stock your pond, there's a lot that go into that. You know, how big is your pond, all that stuff, and we'll get into those things. But what are the basic fish that you think are good fish to stock in a pond here in our state if you're going to do a stocking?
Well, there's three main ones that conservation department, when we stock our own areas or when we start an area, and that's going to be bluegill, channel catfish, and largemouth bass. Those are the big three that when we did stock private farm ponds, those are what we would stock. And that was that's another program, the private farm pond stocking. That's one that unfortunately we ended a number of years ago. I guess it's been about 10 years ago or so now, but those are the ones we recommend when people are building a pond. You know, the bluegill, you typically would add those first, get those established, and the bluegill, a good bluegill population, you know, it provides the food source for the bass and everything else. So you add the bluegill first, you can add channel catfish at the same time as bluegill, let those get established, and then you bring in the bass later on, maybe in the fall. Like say you do this in the spring, you can bring the bass in the fall, and the bass, of course, are the big predators. They're going to be feeding on the bluegill, help, you know, keeping the bluegill population in check. And then the channel catfish, they're kind of the cleanup crew. They'll eat a little bit of everything, and they may eat a live fish here and there, but the channel catfish are just kind of doing their thing out there. But that's a good balance right there. And there are other fish you can add, and there's ways to do it. But if you want to go with just a good solid, you know, good balanced population, that would be it. Any other fish you add, you have to be aware that how it may, you know, impact and work with the balance. But those are the big three.
So before we get into the bad ones, why don't you kind of tell folks the other fish that are maybe a decent idea, you know, that you have to watch, yes, but what are some other fish that are okay to add?
My feelings are going to be hurt if you don't say crappie.
He's not going to. I already know that. Which is surprised
I like him
me.
So much.
We'll get into that in a minute. But what are the other fish that are a decent idea before we start talking about everybody's favorite?
Yeah. Well, like you said, in addition to bluegill and largemouth bass and the channel catfish, red-eared sunfish, that's another bluegill-type fish. They get larger than bluegill. They've got small mouths, but they eat... One of their big food sources is snails. They'll actually eat snails in the pond, and this is another topic. But snails are kind of part of a life cycle of parasites, I guess, that can infect fish. Sometimes people will call me and say, "Hey, my fish have worms in them when I fillet them. What's going on there? And what can I do about it?" Well, red-eared sunfish eat snails, and the snails are kind of part of that worm life cycle. So that's a side note there, but red-eared sunfish is a native fish to Missouri. It's a good one to put in ponds.
Okay.
Green sunfish, another native fish to Missouri. They're similar to a bluegill, have a larger mouth, so they eat slightly bigger bait. So they're fun to catch. They're a little longer and thinner body shape, not quite as flat and round as a bluegill, but they're pretty close. Hybrid bluegill or hybrid sunfish, that's another one, which is actually a cross between a bluegill and a green sunfish. A lot of people will put hybrid sunfish in their pond. We stock hybrid sunfish in a lot of our area, prior to like a family fishing day or a kid's fishing day. If we want that pond to really have some good action for kids, we'll put hybrid bluegill in there or hybrid sunfish, same thing. Easy to raise. We raise them in our hatcheries, but they will not reproduce in a pond, so they do not overpopulate. Oh. There's no chance, but they like to hit, so they're a fun one to add. I get phone calls from people asking about their ponds, you know, grandparents that talk about their farm pond and they want to get it in shape, but they'll say, I hear this pretty regularly from grandparents that say, "Oh yeah, I'll have a hybrid bluegill put in it every year for my grandkids, you know, because I want them to catch fish." And hybrid bluegill, hybrid sunfish, they seem to want to eat.
Yep.
So yeah, those are good fish to add. Let's see, those are probably the main ones. And again, we crappie is not one that we initially recommend, but we do have publications on. Yeah, but yeah, you can do crappie, and we have information on if people want crappie, how to do it. And people might say, well, what's the problem with crappie? Well, we talked about that balance. It's all about having a balanced situation where the bluegill, you know, they're the food source, and then you've got the predator that keeps that food source in check, and that's the largemouth bass. Well, crappie are a second predator. Crappie are also feeding on the bluegill. So now you've got this bluegill population that has to maintain largemouth bass, and now they have to maintain crappie. And in some situations, crappie can really reproduce in a pond, which you would think would be a good thing. But, you know, an overpopulated fish bass population or an overpopulated crappie population, you know, you can lead to stunted fish. You know, again, another one people call up and say, oh, I've got a bunch of crappie in there, but they're all paper thin. When I catch them, they're all paper thin, you know, and that can be a problem with, again, you've got crappie and bass, a lot of predators and not enough food for them. The bluegill just can't feed them enough. So, so, you know, crappie, like I said, we have areas of our own that have crappie and bass in them. But the key to it is you have to harvest them, which people will think, well, hey, that's not a problem for me. I want to eat those crappie.
Right.
But that's how you prevent the stunted, you know, or what, you know, some people think of overstocked fish, overstocked bass or crappie is you have to harvest them. So that idea of catching a small crappie thinking, oh, I'm going to throw it back, or catching a small bass, oh, I'm going to throw it back to get it bigger, that's really not the answer. You want to keep pulling those small ones out of there so the remaining ones, you know, they have more food to eat and get bigger. So
less mouths to feed.
Yeah.
That's right. So, yeah, it really, you know, crappie and bass, you know, they reproduce in a pond. You really can't over-harvest them. So people just need to keep the crappie they're pulling out of there, keep the small ones, and they'll notice over time that, yeah, their fish will get bigger.
Well, that answers my next question. I was going to ask, how do you know if you have an overpopulation? Should you just start pulling small ones as you catch them, or should you wait until you have an idea? And so that pretty much answered that question. So,
yeah. Yeah, pretty much, you know, if, like I said, it's virtually impossible to fish a pond out or to over harvest fish. You know, they're in there doing their thing and reproducing so quickly anyway that by the time a person thinks, well, I'm going to throw them back until I think maybe I have a problem and I need to start. Well, by that time they're already kind of behind the curve and they need to start really harvesting fish to get them out of there. But yeah, I tell land or pond owners to, yeah, you know, don't worry about people harvesting too many fish or anything like that. I mean, just go ahead and let people, you know, harvest what they want. There's no real reason to throw the small ones back so they'll get bigger, because there's plenty of small ones still in there trying to grow.
Yeah. Now, should you throw the big ones back?
Yeah. That's a good question. And, you know, you really don't need to. I hear people say, oh, I tell everybody, throw the big bass back. I want them to grow to be, you know, throw the breeders back is what I often hear. You know, they'll catch these big bass and they'll say, those are the breeders, put them back. But I've talked to our fisheries biologist and they said, they told me that the prime breeders, the prime spawners, in bass, and it's probably similar in crappie, but not the size wise, but kind of the idea, but the prime breeders, the prime spawners with largemouth bass are your 15 inchers. Those 15, 16 inch bass, those are the ones who are, you know, they're old enough now that they're reproducing and they're producing the eggs. And then they're the bigger ones. When you start getting those, you know, several pound bass, you start getting, you know, 22 inches on up, 20 inches, 22, 24. Yeah, they're reproducing as they can, but they're, you know, they're beyond their prime. So yeah, you can
take those out.
That's pretty much it. You're right. So yeah, you don't have to worry about throwing those breeders back. It's the 15 inchers that are really doing all the work.
Okay.
That's funny. So, yeah, that was one thing that surprised me was, you know, crappie, because every pond that I can think of that I've ever fished had crappie in it. So I always assumed they would have been a good idea. And then I read that in a couple different articles before we called you, and it surprised me. And it makes sense now that you say it, but it's just it's another predator. And I think I might have an issue, actually, because the kids are starting to catch less and less bluegill in our pond.
Oh, okay. Oh, is that right?
And yeah, we have a lot of crappie that they're catching, which they like. But right, if you think about it, I know crappie are in there, and we're seeing less and less bluegill. So that might mean I have an issue, well, you know, with overpopulation.
Stocks and bluegill.
Probably a good idea. But
I bet you we could talk to a guy that could tell us.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, yeah, you know, if you see your bluegill population going down, one thing I would look at is just, you know, habitat. Do you have enough aquatic plants in there for the young bluegill to hide and be able to get away, you know, get away from the larger fish and be able to grow? And that's a couple things I want to mention real quick is when people do have stunt bass, again, overpopulated, or they're paper thin crappie, I mean, they're correctly thinking these fish aren't eating enough. These fish need more food. And what a lot of folks often do is they'll run out and order a bunch of minnows, fathead minnows or something, and they'll get a big supply of those and dump those in there. And really, that's not going to solve the problem long term. All that happens, put in a supply of minnows to fatten their fish up, is those minnows probably get eaten almost immediately, and then they're gone. They're completely gone, and it didn't really do anything long term. The long term is to harvest those bigger fish out of there, and you know, that harvest those, increase the harvest on those stunted fish, mm-hmm, which then allows the bluegill population to do what it needs to do, and that is just kind of keep growing. But yeah, getting that bluegill in balance by, you know, providing them plenty of cover and stuff so they can grow and is a good thing. But yeah, again, that's a real common problem. Some people, as far as the cover, maybe not having enough cover. Sometimes that's due to people adding grass carp to their pond when they don't, or they shouldn't have added grass carp.
Guilty.
Yeah. Grass carp are great for certain pond plants, but they do not touch other pond plants, like the pond algae. That's real common. That's slimy algae. People will often think, oh, I need to put grass carp in there. They'll take care of it. Well, they'll put grass carp in, find out that the grass carp really don't do much for that slimy algae. But the grass carp ate up everything else that was of benefit. The grass carp targeted kind of the more leafy plants that maybe a lot of the bluegill were growing up in. So. Yeah, we always recommend only put grass carp in if you're having, you know, real problems with a particular type of plant that we know grass eat, and that works out pretty well by doing it that way.
Yeah, that was the mistake I made. When I was having that problem that we mentioned at the beginning of the show, first thing I went and did without talking to anybody was went and bought grass carp and put them in my pond. I think I put 10 of them in there or something like that. And
yeah,
then I talked to somebody and they're like, well, and this could be wrong, but this is what I remember hearing. The plant that you're having a problem with grows from the bottom to the top, so they're not going to eat that. Now, I could be wrong. And funny, after I did the kill and got rid of that stuff, I thought the grass carp were gone. I'd never seen them.
Oh, yeah?
Not 2 weeks ago, I was down there, and there is a giant in there.
Oh, yeah.
I saw him on top of the water doing his thing, and I'm like, nope, okay, they're still not dead.
Still there.
But so is that true about grass carp? Do they only eat what is on top of the water? That's what I had always heard.
That's not true. That's probably... like you were saying, that's probably where people see them. They see them feeding maybe on some surface plants, or maybe they're, who knows what they're doing up there, I guess. But no, they generally feed underwater. They like the tender roots, the tender plants that are growing up from the bottom. They really go for those. So, but when they're feeding down like that, you know, I guess most people don't see that. So,
sure.
You don't really know that they are feeding, But no, they'll feed all over, really.
That's exactly why I don't have a problem with that pond weed anymore. Then
so
they're just eating it.
I always thought grass carp, that it was how you got rid of the moss, the algae. So what would be, I mean, not to go into too much detail here for just our short time, but what would be a good remedy for that moss or algae?
If it's too bad, you know, I mean, you can have it, not having some's fine, but if it's so thick that it's creating a pond kill, like we talked about, what's a good remedy on something like that?
Yeah, there's a couple. Well, when you have it to that extent, that's definitely a sign that there's a lot of nutrients. There's a lot of something fertilizing that algae in there. There's a lot of nutrients getting in your pond. So that'd be one thing to look for is if livestock have access to your pond, you know, fence that livestock out. That'll help. Lots of times people really don't. That's not really an option. Maybe livestock can't get in their pond, but maybe a neighboring landowner has livestock and it ultimately kind of flows into your pond. But if you can reduce nutrients, that's one thing to do. But most of the time, really what you have to do is add chemicals. Mm-hmm. And there are safe chemicals to add that if you follow the instructions, they work just fine. They don't harm the fish. But for the algae, some sort of copper-based chemical, copper sulfate-based chemical. There's all different varieties out there. You can go to any kind of farm and feed and tell them you need something to treat algae in your pond, and they'll probably walk you right to it. But I think we kind of mentioned it earlier. Again, this algae and the warm water in the summer can add to potential fish kills. And anytime you treat a pond to kill off a plant, when that, you know, the algae or the other plants, as those plants die off, they decompose, and they also pull oxygen from the water as they're decomposing. So you don't want to kill off a bunch of plants in the summertime. So we always tell people never treat your pond, never kill off any plant, don't add any kind of chemicals when the water temperature is above 80 degrees. So I think we're there right now for this time of the year. Yeah. So if someone wanted to, if someone was having a problem, they kind of have to wait it out until the water cools off, and then you can start treating. But most people don't like to add, and I'm with them. I can understand how you don't want to add chemicals to your water. It can be expensive, but for algae with that type of problem, that much of a problem, that's really the best way is just using some of that copper chemical. It's effective and works well.
Makes sense,
yeah. What about, we mentioned channel cat earlier, and it made me think of this question. I've heard people complain, or not even complain, just talk about, you know, their pond being clear compared to their neighbor's pond being muddy or cloudy. There's a lot of factors that go into muddy or cloudy water. I know that I looked into this at our pond, my neighbor's pond. We have ponds maybe 250 feet apart from each other. They're about the exact same size, and his pond is a lot prettier, I would say, than mine. Mine looks muddy all the time, right? And I had a guy have me take some samples of water, and from there, he figured out, you know, what my issue might be. But what are some things to look at when you have a cloudy pond, and what are the factors that go into creating that, I don't know, that problem? Right. It's not even a problem, but that's the word I'm using.
Yeah. Yeah, that water sample, that's usually the first thing we tell people to do is, if their pond is cloudy or muddy looking or something, we tell people get a quart jar or something and just go over there and try to scoop up a sample of water and take that jar and set it somewhere in your house in the dark, you know, a closet or something like that, and set it there for a couple of weeks and just undisturbed leave that jar. And then come back after a couple of weeks and see if it was in the water settled out. See if the water looks clear and whatever it was is kind of settled to the bottom. If it has, well, that will tell our fisheries biologist something. And again, you can contact, you know, your local fisheries staff person or private lands. And that's one of the things I'll ask you is, have you done this? And if it has settled out, that lets you know that, your pond is murky or muddy looking because soil or particulates are getting stirred up. And if it has not settled out, then we're talking about, it could be actually kind of a biological thing going on. It could be bacteria in the water, you know, not anything to be scared of or anything, but just, you know, this normal bacteria that is blooming and causes this cloudy water. Typically, I think it may be more common to be particulates floating around in the water, and then you have to kind of figure out what the site could be. It could be that you have a lot of catfish, ponds that have catfish. Bullheads are notorious for going around, kind of rooting around and keeping your pond stirred up. Also, you know, wind is located in an area that, I don't know, isn't protected from a lot of wind, and you've got a lot of wave action that can kind of keep your pond kind of stirred up a little bit. Also, again, we talked about watershed earlier. As water's flowing to your pond, if that water is you know, if it's flowing through, you know, vegetation and things like that that kind of help filter and slow the water down, that right. helps to keep erosive stuff from flowing into your pond. But to fact that we mercury, take that water spill and see what happens to it after a couple of weeks.
Gotcha. Yeah, that was the exact thing that guy told me, and I did the same thing you just said, Andrew. I had the mason jar. It settled, so he was like, hey, I bet you money you have catfish. And I was like, nope, not a chance. I've lived here for whatever, how long, and I've never seen a single catfish. And, of course, I was dead wrong. I had a buddy come out.
Right.
Yeah, I had a buddy come out and set some lines, and he did it for a couple weeks and just to see. And he caught dozens. One was like a 14-pounder.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
I mean, caught dozens of catfish, and I'm like, I'll be damned. I've got catfish in this thing, and that's obviously what my issue is.
Yeah, the interesting thing about channel catfish, yeah. Some ponds catfish reproduce in, and other ponds they don't. So some people, when they buy channel catfish and stock their pond, it's almost like what we call a put and take. You put them in there, and you take them out, and then when they're all taken out, you have to put more back in. And but some ponds, actually, the catfish reproduce in. You know, the pond is big enough, or the pond's, you got the right type of soil, or the bottom shape of the pond is what the catfish like, and they can find kind of little holes and stuff and spawn in there. But, catfish are not one of those guaranteed fish to reproduce in a pond. They reproduce in a lot of ponds, but, again, a lot of people I know, they buy 50 catfish, and they put them in there, and after a few years they realize, okay, we're not catching as many catfish anymore, probably time to put more in. But, Sound like you did not have that problem.
No. So if they don't have the right environment, they won't reproduce.
That's correct.
That's crazy. Yep. They won't even try it, huh? That's interesting. I mean, maybe they're trying it. It's not working, but
self-personal.
That's
question.
Right. Yeah. They're not. Yeah. They're not succeeding at it. That's right.
Well, and I guess one last question, which, you know, people might want to know, when you do decide to stock your pond and try to make it a nice fishing pond, what are some numbers, some good numbers to use as far as how many fish to buy per acre and that sort of stuff? What do you recommend?
Well, yeah, it really it depends on where your pond is located. Again, we talked about it earlier. You know, Missouri being kind of in the middle of the country, and northern Missouri is different from southern Missouri. Well, that affects you know, how many fish you need to put in there.
Sure.
I don't have the numbers off the top of my head. I was trying to see if I could look them up here real quick, but I don't think I can. But the best place to find those numbers is if you go to our website, the Department of Conservation, go to MissouriConservation.org. You could probably search pond stocking, and we have online an aqua guide, we call it. It's a little publication, and it talks about, you know, the fish we recommend for stocking. But on the back page of that, it actually has a table, and it lists the county, and you find your county, and it right there it tells you how many bluegill you need to add, you know, and how many largemouth bass and how many channel catfish. And it, for some counties, it could be they say add 200 bluegill and or 500 bluegill and 100 largemouth bass, but then for another county, it could be only add 200 bluegill and 50 of this, but per acre. But the point is, yeah, you're right. There are recommended numbers out there, and that's important for people to make sure they do that if they want to have the best luck. But, yeah, just go to MissouriConservation.org and type in pond stocking, and they should be able to find that pretty quick.
Yeah, we'll include a link in our show notes for that, too, so people can maybe get to it pretty easily. Another question people have, and I, of course, know this because I go and get my stuff from them, but people always want to know, where can I get fish? It's still a deal where you find a private hatchery now, correct? Or you're not running a program at the current time, right?
That's right. Yeah, we do not. There's a couple ways to do it. the again, if someone's searching online, like you said, that link, and they go to our stocking, it's called Stocking Fish in Your Pond information. Right along with that is a list of Missouri fish producers around the state. It has them listed by county, and you can find the one closest to you. And but what most people do is they'll pick up their, again, their local farm and feed store, or maybe a local Orscheln's or something. They often have what they call a fish days, where they have these, yep. they work with the Missouri fish producers to bring in fish. And I think you place your order and then they'll bring them in. But that's a good way to do it right there is to, just get in touch with your local feed store, farm and feed, Orscheln's type place, MFA, and ask, do they sell fish or when their fish days are, and they'll connect them. But again, outside of those fish days, you can also contact those fish producers directly, with our Missouri fish producers list. And that's usually the best way to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I've done that several times. So, well, we really, thank you for coming on. I mean, you got anything else, Andy, for him?
No, I think we have plenty of great information on this, and, I've definitely learned a thing or two for sure.
It wasn't a crappie show.
Good.
I've been waiting for like an hour to say that. But no, I think this was a great show. It gives people some good information to think about how can they produce a good fishing pond. I think that was the whole reason we thought about this, doing it with you, was the way we have to fish in our lives now. We don't have the time to get out on a lake, go out to the rivers and stuff, and so our fishing is a lot of times just here at our ponds. And it's
right.
It's nice to be able to have a healthy pond where the kids can go out and have fun. And
you want to make the best out of your experience, out of your time.
Yeah. So.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that, have a pond that's in bad shape. And it's not too terribly hard to turn it around. It's just a matter of knowing what to do. So I think this gives people at least some good starting information. And then. Do you have any contact information you had talked about some pond professionals within the department where people might be able to call or email with questions they might have?
Yeah, again, we've got our staff located all around the state. It really, the best site for people to contact their local conservation department office, and they'll connect them with who the local staff person is. But, And again, like you said, it's you can, if someone's got a pond that's got some real problems, yeah, it can be turned around. And our biologists that are working out there, our private lands folks and our fisheries folks that are, in every county of the state, they deal with these same issues with our own areas. So that's why I tell people, we don't really have one person to talk to or two people. They just call their local office and they'll connect them with the person in their area. And that person in their area, like I said, they're familiar with the soil types and kind of the conditions going on in that area. So, they'll be the best ones. But,
cool.
Rather than giving you a bunch of names and numbers, folks can just call their local office and they'll take it from there.
Yeah, which they can get that information on MDC's website, local office numbers too. So,
that's right.
We really thank you for coming on. I think it was really good information. And unless you got anything else for him, Andy?
I'm good.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Andrew.
Oh, my pleasure. Yeah, there's a lot to it. It's a fun topic.
All right, that's the show.
That was a little fishy.
That's the second time you made that joke.
Yeah, it's a good one.
That's a crappie joke.
That's the second time you made that one.
Oh, yeah. My bad. Anyway, hope everybody enjoyed it. We had a lot of fun learning. I mean, a lot of the stuff I went through on my personal pond, kind of Andrew said again, and so it's kind of nice to know that some of the stuff I did back then, some good decisions, some bad decisions, but those are things that there's some people out there that are trying to figure out what they want to do with their pond. And
very relatable episode.
Sure. Yeah, there's a lot of people that have ponds or fish ponds or
I'm still upset about my crappie not being on the list.
Yeah, when I read that, I was surprised. How would you know that? I mean, every freaking pond in this state has crappie, and it's actually not a great idea, but I'm not going to get rid of them.
It sounded like, I could be wrong, is one or the other for maybe crappie and bass.
Yeah, like they butt heads, which makes sense. They're both predators.
Right.
So anyway, hope y'all enjoyed the show. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at Missouri Woods and Water, all spelled out. Our Facebook page, same thing, Missouri Woods and Water. Go hit that subscribe wherever you listen and help us out. Yep. And we appreciate the support.
Absolutely.
Anything else, dude?
That's it.
All right. We'll talk to y'all later.